On this episode of the Fieldhouse Files, the Pacers enter the final stretch of the regular season. Stephanie White joins to discuss Caitlin Clark and the women's game from the Final Four in Cleveland. And then I'll be joined by Mike Nichols of Group 1001 to hear about Gainbridge naming rights and their recent deal with Caitlin Clark.
I know that Fieldhouse Files has a prolific following. You know, I just want to be careful about sharing too much with the world.
And welcome into the Fieldhouse Files, the podcast where I take you behind the scenes with the Pacers, talk to individuals on and around the team, and tell you what you need to know. Hi again, everybody. Hope you are doing well here already into April. Another good time to remind you to join all my coverage in the community at fieldhousefiles.com for daily Pacers coverage. Couple good interviews in store for you today, but first, want to catch you up on some of the news items that have happened around the Pacers here recently, because right now it's go time. It's all about finishing strong. 5 games over the next 10 days for these Pacers, and right now they're trying to hold steady at least with the 6th seed. Why is that so important? It's because spots 1 through 6 in the conferences are guaranteed a playoff spot. Right now, the Pacers are only guaranteed a spot in the play-in at worst. And so spots through 7 through 10, you're still going to have to be battling. Now, the good news is you'd still probably get 2 opportunities to win 1 game, which would get you in the postseason. But again, you don't want to mess with that. You don't know if injuries happen. You don't know if a bad matchup happens or home court advantage and those sort of things. You want to just take care of it and get to the playoffs. As of this recording on Friday morning, the Pacers are in the 6th spot. That means in the first round, they would face the Cleveland Cavaliers, which I think would be the most advantageous matchup that they could have, just considering the matchup, the injuries, the success that they have had against the Cavs earlier this season. I like that. Magic have length, athleticism, not a great matchup. The Knicks, physical, tough. Now, Julius Randle's out for the season, but still, the Knicks are very difficult. MSG's tough to play in. You don't want that. And then if you would fall back to a 7 or 8 seed and get in the playoffs, then it's really tough with Boston or Milwaukee. But Pacers with 5 games, 10 days here, and then it's playoff time, should be at least, for the first time since 2020. Now, the team is coming off a very poor game up in Brooklyn. That was a bad one. That's a clinker. That's one that you're going to regret both right now and later in the season, I think. It's one of at least 8 games that they should have taken care of their business. I go back to earlier in the season. I've talked about it on this podcast, right? A couple losses to Portland, a couple losses to the Charlotte Hornets, to the Wizards, to the Spurs, now to the Brooklyn Nets, 115-111. That was on Wednesday night. Just did not look good. Playing from behind almost the entire time, so it was an uphill battle. And then once they got back, I'm not sure what that was, the last 90 seconds and really the last 7 or 8 minutes or so, but especially the final 90 seconds, a couple turnovers, poor mistakes, you're not moving the ball. Now, it was right after Siakam went off for 13 points in a row. Then you're launching shots, and the team didn't shoot well. I think 2 for 14 from distance in that final quarter. Too many times it's been left up to a loss because of poor shooting. You take things in under your control and try to eliminate that. Another game where the opponent had a lot of free throws, plus 10 at the line. They attempted 27, did the Nets. You can't allow that. Pacers have to do a better job of defending without fouling. They've done a great job to keeping opponents off the arc. They're number 1 in the league in doing so in terms of three-pointers attempted from the line, but at the same point, they're top 2 in points in the paint allowed. Number 1, I think, in free throw attempts given up per game. So you can see it's coming inside the arc. Pacers defending the 3-point arc, and opposing teams are either getting to the paint or are getting fouled. And I think what we saw with the Nets or the loss to the Bulls or the previous loss to the Bulls where it was in overtime and shouldn't even gotten to that point, it's inexperience. It's guys that haven't been there. What I will say is it feels like we keep repeating how, hey, that's a good lesson learned. Hey, this is what an inexperienced team does. They go through their trials and tribulations, and they figure it out, and this is why you need this experience. Yeah, that's great and dandy, but also you're pushing game 80 right now almost. The lesson should have, for the most part, already happened. You're still learning some, but the poor starts, poor finishes to quarters. Rick Carlisle, as I wrote in my story on fieldhousefiles.com, not only used a timeout 25 seconds into the second quarter because he felt like he needed it, he called the first timeout in each of the four quarters. That's inconsistency, and that's been the story, I think, of this Pacers season. I'm tired of the lessons, but that inexperience is something that it is absolutely true, and it was even more true after you trade Bruce Brown, you move on from Buddy Hield, and then Miles Turner's recent injury, which brings me to this next point. Miles, earlier in the week against the Brooklyn Nets, went up, had his dunk contested, and his right index finger, that had to hurt, and I know it did. He immediately went to the sideline and to head associate athletic trainer in Carl Eaton and had him kind of pull it, replace it, I guess. I don't know what the right terminology is. Didn't do it immediately. Went back to the at least tunnel, maybe the locker room, but certainly the tunnel there while Carlisle used a timeout so that he could keep Miles in the game, because if he exits with the injury, he cannot return to the game. Now, it was a blowout. Pacers won that game by 22 points. We're up the majority. And that's talk about the inconsistency. Dominate when big at home. Lose, play poorly there on the road. But Miles, the x-rays were negative, which is a very good sign. That doesn't mean there's nothing there, though. I'm sure there was soreness, absolutely some swelling you would expect right there. And he was scheduled to see a specialist before the team left for Brooklyn on Tuesday early afternoon. And we don't know the results of that. He was with the team on the trip. He did not play, was not in uniform for the loss on Wednesday against Brooklyn. But you did see tape on his fingers, on his right index and middle fingers to kind of keep them together. Kind of reminded me of Reggie Miller taping his fingers back in the day. But Miles has had a really good season and underrated season, just the level in which he's impacted things. Team is 2-3 this season without him. He's a veteran. I talk about them trading a couple of their vets. Well, Miles is one of them. He didn't get traded, but he was unavailable. So that's another reason, a negative to what they were dealing with. But you got to overcome those circumstances, especially here late in the season. Now, last week, speaking of Miles, he did something special out in the community. The team had a rare 2 days off. So on one of the days, Saturday afternoon, he spent more than an hour up in Fishers at Ascension St. Vincent's in Fishers, one of the primary team sponsors and partners. I was up there. It was a fabulous afternoon. I was the one writer up there, and among the things that you saw was so many diehard fans, especially kids, impacting kids, and that's what I touched on my Sunday feature story, is just how many smiles he brought to faces of kids, which was a lot of fun to see. No number of them in jerseys, and he was signing autographs, and a huge credit to whomever it was in marketing that already had a poster made of him setting the franchise blocks record, because that was one of the primary things that he was signing for fans there, in addition to maybe whatever else they had. Each fan was limited to one item, but you know, there was a mom and a dad and two kids, and by that point you could get several things signed. But that was a cool thing, and I give Miles credit as well. He was smiling through all of that, clearly had a good time interacting with kids and adults and just a lot of fans up there in Fishers. And the notable thing too, by the way, for the franchise, where it was located, you might think of it fairly close to Ruoff Home Mortgage Center, where myself and probably many of you go, at least here in Central Indiana, for your summer concerts. Well, this location of the hospital, right across the highway, what is that, I-65, is where the new venue for the Mad Ants was being built. And so that's a key area for the Pacers and their sponsors for what they were getting accomplished up there. And that's still a year away, so the Mad Ants plan to play another season at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. But that said, that is going up and something to keep an eye on, and it brings me to my next point. Oscar Tshiebwe, undrafted rookie from Kentucky. He led the NCAA men's college basketball in rebounding each of the last 2 years, comes to the G League on a two-way contract, one of three two-way players, and goes ahead and in his rookie year leads the entire G League in rebounds, 16.6 rebounds per game, which is incredible. Spent most of his time this season with the Mad Ants on this two-way contract. As that's as easily his best skill. It's something that does translate. You're just trying to hope he has more of a more well-rounded game for consideration to move him up and get more time with the Pacers. So congrats to Oscar, who's had a memorable season. Remember, he was involved in All-Star Weekend in a number of ways with the G League Up Next game, which he won. He hit the game-winning free throw, in fact, that put them over the top. His team went 2-0. A couple days before that, he was involved in Rising Stars, just like Benedict Mathurin was, and Mathurin won that one with his team. But the bad sign for the Pacers, really the mad ants this week, was they lost their opening round game of the playoffs to Delaware. It was a home game, too. But just a different lineup, different rotation. Guys gone. Reed Travis left the team to play in Japan. Jordan Bell left to play overseas. Darius McGee was injured, did not play. Mojave King did not play. Different lineups, and the guys just did not have it. I think Delaware started, I want to say, like 11 of 14 from the field. I think it was even more ridiculous than that. Maybe it was 17 of 20. Either way, it was remarkable shooting. And then much like the Pacers the other night, the Mad Ants just could not fight back and struggled. I think they got it to within like 8 or 12 just before the half. But then right before the half, Delaware went on a short run. And so that was unreal. They pushed their lead back up to like 17, and Mad Ants didn't get much closer after that. Now, Mad Ants season's over. Tom Hankins, team's head coach, was finished runner-up for Coach of the Year in the G League, so props to him. One other note here before my interviews and conversations, shout-out to TJ McConnell. Well-deserved honor, named one of 12 finalists in the NBA for the Twyman Stokes Teammate of the Year Award, and I'm not sure I need to explain what that is, what that means, or what it takes to qualify, but Teammate of the Year, you think TJ McConnell, it's a no-brainer. Challenge is you're battling up against 11 other players. There were six representatives named from each conference, but TJ McConnell should be one of the top finishers, I believe, if he does not win it, because he is the epitome of what you want in a teammate and a friend and all those sorts of things, those descriptions. And there's a big reason why the Pacers have kept him around as long as they had, in addition to his contributions on the court. He started his career undrafted in Philadelphia. For whatever reason, they didn't re-sign him. And now he's already played more games, more time. And after having a career season last year with the Pacers, he's having another career season. He topped that here this season. If you remember, game one, he started the season out of the rotation. So he's done an excellent job. His contract for next season is not fully guaranteed. That's something we can get into at the end of this regular season. But the Pacers, as of this recording, 5 games left versus OKC, versus Miami. 2 key games, Friday, then Sunday. Then at Toronto, at Cleveland, followed by next Sunday. Regular season's over in a week, basically. A home game against Atlanta as assistant coach Ronald Nord returns here to Indianapolis to wrap up the regular season. Again, on this podcast, you'll hear from Stephanie White and Mike Nichols of Group 1001. But first up, a good conversation, a fun one with Stephanie White, former standout player here in Indiana, played locally, attended Purdue, played for the Fever, coached for the Fever, head coach for the Fever, took him to the WNBA Finals, coached at Vanderbilt, now's back in the WNBA as the second-year head coach for the Connecticut Sun, but she's also remains a analyst. You see her on TV, on BTN, on ESPN, most recently called several tournament games. Anyway, she's in Cleveland right now. I wanted some perspective on how this women's game has just blown up, how so much attention they are getting after getting an average of 12.3 million viewers for Iowa and LSU, how fun that was. And then the local angle, of course, is coming up in 10 days, exactly. The Fever have the number one overall pick, and yeah, it's of course going to be Caitlin Clark. Like, there's zero doubt about that. So Stephanie White comes on. Good to catch up with her and have her enlighten us on the Caitlin Clark effect and all that she's seen and maybe how her game will translate and how soon it will translate to the WNBA. All right, as promised, now joined by Stephanie White, the WNBA Coach of the Year last year with the Connecticut Sun, a game analyst on ESPN, both the NBA and the women's game as well. She's joining me now from Cleveland, where it's the place to be this weekend. Steph, what are you looking forward to most this weekend and seeing what this does in the big picture as well for the women's game?
I'm just excited about the matchups. You know, we've got star power. We've got great teams. It's the excitement that started the season and has carried through to the Final Four has just been outstanding. And I'm going to tell you, Scott, it's like there are so many people out here in Cleveland already that are just excited about the opportunity to witness this Final Four and, you know, potentially witness history in the making for Caitlin Clark and for the Iowa Hawkeyes.
One of the big things about it right now, obviously, is the everybody talking about the TV number, and us in the business understand too, like that's an inexact science to an extent. But at the same time, it does tell a big picture, and the picture is there hadn't been any interest like there is right now in the women's game. It's just massive. And you mentioned the star appeal, and I think that goes for both the teams and for the players, but obviously stars sell. And I mean, you got UConn, who's fantastic historically. Then, of course, you have Caitlin Clark in Iowa and what they've been able to accomplish. South Carolina, Dawn Staley, the polarizing coach and fantastic coach and an undefeated season. I think NC State, to me, is probably the wild card of all that bunch, but so much of the star power has what has really brought attention, I think, right now to what's going on in Cleveland.
Yeah, it absolutely has. And, you know, NC State was the surprise of the country in the fall when they went from being unranked to then being in the top 10. They faltered a little bit, but found their way in here. You know, it's just there's just been so much excitement and so much buzz. And you talked about the TV number. And look, this is the perfect storm, so to speak.
Yeah.
The needle has been shifting, but it's happening rapidly now. And you've got star appeal, number one. You've got social media engagement, number two, and number three, you've got opportunities to see these players and these stars in primetime locations. You know, it used to be if you wanted to find these games, you had to search for them, right? Like you had to be a women's basketball fan that specifically wanted to search to find these games, whether they were on at odd times, whether they were on sort of back channels of networks and not in primetime locations and not on the big channels. You know, you had to search for them. Now you're seeing that when you put them in primetime, when you put them front and center, that everyone watches. And this is something that we in the business have been battling for a long time. And the numbers speak for themselves. When you have opportunity, when you have the star power, and then when you put these games in positions for people to be able to find them, you get these results. And I feel like the needle's moving and we're at a tipping point right now. And I'm just thankful to continue to be a small part of enjoying this success.
That's a great point about the availability. Like for me, it doesn't matter. I have all the platforms, I'll watch wherever, but that's not typical. Most do not have access. So whether it's the streaming networks or even like a YouTube or anything like that this year, I think it's been the last couple, but certainly this year, ESPN broadcast every single one of those games. And in fact, you were on the call of a couple of the primary ones, I think it was 2 weekends ago, doing both of Iowa and Caitlin Clark's games. So what was that experience like for you, knowing like you're calling the game of the week here, like this is the game everybody wants to watch?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, you know, I've been fortunate to be able to call a number of her games throughout the course of the career, but there's been nothing like this season. In fact, I called their game at Maryland, and I'll never forget it because I was in the same hotel as they were. And I'm coming down the escalator 3 hours before the game. And Scott, the hotel is just packed, hundreds of people. It's roped off like it would be for an NBA team or an NFL team. There's security guards everywhere. These people in the lobby of the hotel, just to get a glimpse of Caitlin Clark and this Iowa Hawkeye team. You know, she's, in fact, yesterday I was talking to somebody who said that she's the Taylor Swift of women's basketball. Like that's how she's being referred to. And from a non-basketball person, right? So it's the craziness of this team and Caitlin Clark's ability right now to captivate a national audience. But you're right; it's also a commitment to calling to putting these games in positions where people can see them. 2 years ago, Lisa Byington and I called the first women's basketball game that was ever broadcast on Big Fox, Iowa at Michigan, first one. And think of how many Big Fox had in primetime this year. So making a commitment to putting these games in primetime. And you know, obviously Iowa's selling right now. They're selling out every arena. The environment's been awesome. So being out there in the first round of the tournament was so much fun.
Yeah, and then these TV execs leaned into it. I think Fox, it felt like, had maybe 6 or 7 of just Iowa games on top of whatever else they did. And then Peacock obviously leaned into it heavily. And as they did more and more broadcasts this year. And it's funny, I was literally going to go to the Taylor Swift point because that's a little bit what it feels like, Steph, here. It's almost one, like, you got to be there. You don't want to miss out. It is absolutely part of the social media aspect and all that. Let me get a glimpse. Let me get a video that I can share with everyone. So much of it, I think, too, is you previously heard criticisms about the women's game. It's not like the men because they can't dunk. They can't fit. Well, she can shoot like the rest of them. We saw Sabrina Ionescu in the All-Star game. She can shoot like the rest of them. I think that in large part has kind of leveled it a little bit where those that were maybe naysayers or on the outside, that's roped them in a little bit. On top of the fact, like, you never know. You have the aspect of you never know what you're going to see on a given night from her or her teammates. And on top of that, they just play hard. And that's a big criticism a lot of times in these NBA or men's games. It's like, can we get some effort? It's the second quarter, but come on.
Right. Yeah, no. And you think even if you're talking collegiately, the women's game is just more fun right now. You know, it's a faster pace. You know, I think the women changing to four quarters changed the game.
Huge.
Gives you more possessions. The shot clock reset gives you more possessions. And I give a ton of credit to these veteran coaches, especially because they've changed the way that they coach. They've opened the floor up for these players who are more versatile and more athletic and more skilled than ever. And they've not pigeonholed them into these half court, you know, strictly set offenses. They've opened it up. They've allowed them to play. They've allowed them to be free flowing. They've allowed them to be versatile. And as a result, you know, you're having high scoring, fast tempo, up-paced basketball games. And that's fun to watch. It's not the grinded out, mostly not the grinded out half court games that you're seeing right now on the men's side. And you're absolutely right. The parallel of the Steph Curry taking the NBA by storm and changing the game, right? Or ruining the game, right? And the Caitlin Clark is the same thing. It's the logo threes. It's the ability to shoot the run-ups in transition, and the ability to then for her to continue to get everybody else on her team going. But there is a symmetry, there is a parallel in that and in the way that the game is opened up and the pace of the game.
And then on top of that, there's a little edge, there's a little moxie, there's a little confidence, and that's needed. That's what I love to see. Now, sometimes, like with any star player, with the refs, it's a little too much. But do like the moxie, the back and forth. That's fun. And to see the mutual respect, I think, come out this past weekend in games between the players and the teams, that's exactly what you're looking for. Now transitioning, we'll look ahead here in about 10 days. The Fever will be really excited here. You are a player here, a star, a coach. Took them to the finals, I think it was your last year. But everyone's fired up, obviously, around here. I've been surprised they haven't advertised like what ticket sales are doing, but I'm sure they're through the roof. I'm wondering from your standpoint, so much of rookies often struggle. They have challenges adapting to the game, but I'm wondering, I don't think that'll be as much perhaps for Caitlin because of shooting, because of passing. I think that translates at any game. Maybe it's usually more big players that have the struggle. They're fouling. They struggle with the physicality. What do you see with that transition?
Yeah, you know, I see a couple of things. First and foremost, she's not going to have it all riding on her shoulders. I mean, you've got last year's number one pick and rookie of the year in Aliyah Boston, and every team wants the one and the five, right? So you've got those two right there. You've got Nelissa Smith, who has been outstanding. You've got Kelsey Mitchell, who can fill it up. So she's not going to have to do it herself. I think the adjustment for her of really understanding shot quality at the next level and what that looks like, not having to force it, but utilizing, you know, her teammates versus not taking away makes her special, right? So I think finding that balance is going to be a transition. I think the other piece is, you know, teams aren't going to play her differently. You know, I'm baffled sometimes watching in college, but then I remember being a coach in college. It's tough to change things up and to do things differently and to have players who can actually execute some of those schemes. And so teams are going to play her differently. And they're going to make her work on the defensive end of the floor. You know, in college, you can hide her because, you know, there's always one or two players that you don't necessarily, quote unquote, have to guard. In the pros, you have to guard pretty much everybody. And so, you know, making her work defensively, you know, forcing her to wear down on that end, trying to take advantage on that end. But you're absolutely right. You know, I don't think it's going to be as steep of a learning curve. I think there's going to be plenty of welcome to the W moments. But the thing that I've admired the most about Caitlin Clark is her ability to adjust, adapt, continue to get better. You know, she's got a competitive fire that is absolutely incredible, and a will to and a work ethic to want to be the best. And that's what separates the great players from the elite players.
And on top of that, I just keep thinking, Steph, about the burden I don't know if that's even the best word for it, but that she is caring for the women's game, if you want to think at large. But on top of that, for her state, for her teammates, doing all the interviews yesterday, it was being the Naismith Player of the Year, and she's asking about her coach coming up and runner-up and what this means for her teammates and trying to refocus. And I can't imagine the number of demands the SID is getting for interviews for her coach, for her teammates. And right now I think she's being smart about it. And from the outside, I think she's turning most of those down knowing, hey, this is my one last shot at it. I want nothing more than a national title. But that burden she's carrying right now has to be very heavy.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And you know, learning from last year's experience where they tried to do everything, I think is huge. You know, trying to shield and pick and choose, you know, which events you're doing, which interviews you're doing to stay locked in, because it is the ultimate challenge right now, right? They're trying to win a national championship and there are so many awards and so many events and so many requests. So learning how to balance that from a year ago and you know, which ones to do and which ones not, I think is important. But on the big picture, you know, I don't envy Caitlin Clark in the situation that she's in, because you're right. There, it's a burden. It's a blessing and a curse. And it always is with the great players. But to be able to, I admire the way that she's handled it. I admire the people around her who are helping her navigate and stay grounded. You know, it's a lot because print media and digital media alone. But then you think of social media and all of the things that must be happening on social media, good and bad. Right. And so for her to be able to stay locked in, NIL, doing commercials here and doing commercials there and having, you know, Peyton Manning's TV crew following her around throughout the course of the season. I mean, all these things that could be distractions, to have been able to navigate it, all the while, as any superstar, people are just waiting for you to fail. They're waiting for you to fail. They're waiting for you to fall off the cliff. They're waiting for you to do something, right? Anything that will bring you down. And I think that she's navigated it really well. I don't know how. She's got an unbelievable maturity about her. I'm sure she has people that she's surrounded with that help her, you know, on that day-to-day basis. I know Lisa Bluter and her staff have done an outstanding job as well. And I know that Indiana Fever fans are excited, and that the organization is excited. And Scott, I got to be honest, I'm not sure that Indiana Pacers, Indiana Fever, maybe even the Colts have seen anything about what what's about to come. And from just a fanatical standpoint, the Taylor Swift, you know, standpoint. And you know, I'm excited to see what it looks like for her. But I also, you know, hope that she can continue to navigate and carry the crown, so to speak, in the way that she has been able to.
I think the best example of the blessing of what she's been able to do is you see her game, they go to a timeout, then she's on the commercial. Like that that would have never been possible seemingly like 5 years ago. No national company like a State Farm or whatever would think like, yeah, let's put the face of women's basketball necessarily. Like Ketch wasn't doing these interviews these advertisements 20 years ago. Like that just wasn't a thing here. And I think you're absolutely right. It'll be great for Indiana fans too. Just at the same time, you mentioned Anthony Richardson, the Colts quarterback, Tyrese Haliburton and Caitlin. And I think their games, how comparable, especially from the passing and vision and setting up teammates, will be special. Last thing for you, because I do want to end on a high in an NBA moment as well. We've seen you back in the NBA this year. Unfortunately, it's been like West Coast, the last game of the day. But how special and meaningful has it been for you to get a taste again of the NBA action and be involved in those, including on Christmas Day, for example?
It's been awesome. You know, it's been so much fun. And, you know, I'm a junkie. I'm a basketball junkie. I love, you know, seeing the game at the highest level and players and strategy and all of those things. And, you know, I've been really blessed. And I think back to the days when I was doing the Pacers games and all the while I was doing some of the college stuff as well. And to be able to have the opportunity again is incredible. You know, I hope that opportunity continues to grow and exist, but it's been awesome. I've enjoyed every single bit of it. I am soaking it all up. I'm continuing to learn and grow from a coaching standpoint by watching this, but also learn and grow from a broadcasting standpoint. And, you know, there's going to be a day where I hang up the coaching whistle and you know, fully commit to the broadcasting. And I hope when that happens, that I'm still able to be able to call games with the best players in the world and enjoy this crazy life that I get to lead.
Yeah, we love it. Good to catch up with you, and enjoy the rest of your time there in Cleveland. We'll be following along, I think, BTN this weekend for you, right?
That's right. Yep. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it.
My thanks again to Stephanie White for joining me. She had a jam-packed schedule, but fit me in after having a speaking engagement and before doing another live hit on the Big Ten Network. Now, for the past few years, Gamebridge has had the naming rights to the Fieldhouse. It's part of the reason why this is named Fieldhouse Files. It's covering anything and everything that comes out of the Fieldhouse and Pacer Sports and Entertainment. Now, the deal obviously previously was Bankers Life, most notably. And the deal with Gamebridge, it was announced on a media day a couple of years ago, which already had jam-packed with other news items. I remember TJ Warren and In a Boot and so many other things going on. So I feel like those naming rights really never got the attention that it warranted and deserved. And on top of that, speaking to Caitlin Clark, how about more about her? She recently signed a deal with the company, Group 1001, and it was even in the works, as Mike Nichols explains, before she declared for the WNBA draft, where the Fever have the top overall pick. So to learn more about that, here's my conversation with Mike Nichols. He's the Chief of Sponsorship Strategy and Activation at Group 1001. That's the parent company to Gamebridge. To discuss that deal and to try to simply understand, too, what Gamebridge is all about. I'm asked a lot about it. I couldn't simplify it, so Mike Nichols comes on the show to help do so. But I bring him in to discuss kind of all the different things that have gone on, I think, for your company and have been going on here. It seems like in recent years, maybe about 5 years, at least on my radar, and most recently about 3 years ago with the brand new naming rights taking over the Fieldhouse. And of course, my site, this podcast, The Fieldhouse Files, so I very much play into the Fieldhouse. I just don't have the Gamebridge, of course, within there. Let's start with that. Why was Gamebridge, and beyond that, Group 1001, why was this activation and becoming the naming rights for one of the most dominant buildings in the downtown landscape something of interest, and where have you seen that benefit your company?
Sure. So first of all, for those people who don't know, as you sort of alluded to, our parent company, Group 1001, is based just north of town in Zionsville. So that's where our corporate headquarters is. We have about 1,300 employees. About half of them reside out of that office or work out of that office. So first and foremost, I'd say, you know, sort of a hometown community pride play, right? Like that's what you see with a lot of the naming rights deals. It's a company who wants to sort of show their civic pride and, you know, show that, hey, we're a part of this community. So I'd say, you know, that's certainly part of it first and foremost. But I would say secondarily for the brand Gamebridge, and we can talk about this a little bit later, kind of how it works for our business. But for us, you know, even though we're based in Indianapolis, we sell products in 49 states across the country. So we've got a wide footprint of where we're actually trying to market to. So while for the people who are in Indianapolis, look at us as an Indianapolis based venue, we've got all of the different events that come through the arena that's now taking the Gamebridge name out in. So when the Celtics are visiting or the Lakers are visiting, or obviously the All-Star game was just there. Now, it's giving us sort of a nationwide footprint for something that is a, you know, it's a local entity there. So I think it kind of serves both of those purposes. Obviously, for the employees who live there in Indianapolis, it's a nice thing to be able to attend games, watch the Pacers, Fever concerts, etc. But more than anything, it's a valuable marketing vehicle that really puts our company, you know, because there's only so many arenas and venues that you can put your names on. So it definitely puts you in an elite company for sure to have your name on a venue that's first class. I should mention the Fieldhouse just won an award, a Sports Business Journal award for one of the top venues in the United States. So obviously the renovation was spectacular. What they've done outside there with the venue is fantastic. So we're just certainly proud to be a part of a venue that's, you know, first class, and we hope sort of reflects the standards of Gamebridge.
Yeah, you mentioned the renovations. That's one of the great things that you guys came in, I think, 2021. And that was kind of still at the beginning of those renovations. It started during the pandemic, and it was 3 years, $400 million. So it probably was a sweet deal for you guys as they were getting a facelift. Now you're being attached even more so to all that. And in addition to Pacers, you mentioned it, Mike, like you talk about All-Star Weekend being here, and that's reached globally. That's the big thing. That's the differentiator between the Super Bowl and NBA All-Star Weekend, is that's global. The Super Bowl very much more so dominates the U.S. type of thing. And then, you know, coming up, you have the first and second round of NCAA tournament. You mentioned all those concerts. So how has something like this, do you feel like, been fruitful? Is it just the brand awareness and getting it out there of this is a company that you could choose to do business with? And if you put it on people's minds, then maybe they look into it and then you can activate with more of your clients.
Sure. So, you know, at the risk of bringing our podcast to a screeching halt, I'll just talk a little bit about the, talk a little bit about our business, and then that way I can kind of inform my answer. So, so as I mentioned, Group 1001 is a $60 billion financial services holding company. So there's a lot of different brands that are under that, but our consumer facing brands are in the life insurance and annuity space. And so if you were to visit with a traditionally annuities have been sold through a financial advisor. So if you were to go and sit with your financial advisor, he or she would sit down and say, hey, let's buy some stocks, let's buy some real estate, blah, 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 and buy some annuities. So traditionally you would buy annuities that way. And the company under our umbrella that sells that way is called Delaware Life. So that's a company that's under Group 1001. Gainbridge, what Gainbridge is trying to do is break down barriers. And for somebody who maybe doesn't have a financial advisor, doesn't have the sort of funds available that warrant, you know, going and making a big annuity purchase, the Gainbridge platform is really kind of a first of its kind, you know, tech forward, where if you just have as little as $1,000 that you just want to put into an annuity and know that it's going to grow safely there for a couple of years and be there. Maybe, you know, my daughter is getting married. And so it's like, hey, I want to put this money aside. She's getting married a year from now, not be as risky as a stock, but also not be in sort of a CD space. So that's what we sell. So we're primarily an annuity seller. And so again, Gainbridge is our direct to consumer platform. So that's gotcha. Why you'll see Gainbridge on most of the things that we do, because we're trying to raise awareness of the brand and in the process, educate people on, you know, hey, we're a part, we'd like you to be a part of our financial future. Our tagline is better way to grow your money. And so that's sort of the 30-second elevator pitch. But it's funny because the first Pacers game I ever went to, and you can relate to this, I sat down with a next to a season ticket holder. And obviously I wasn't the person who was normally there. So he had a high alert, like, who's the new guy, right? Yeah. So he said, what do you do? And I said, you know, I work for Gainbridge. And he said, I'm so glad you sat here, because he said, I just want to know what Gainbridge is. So
exactly. I hear a lot of that, Mike. Yep.
For your listeners out there, you now hopefully have a better idea of what it is and why Gainbridge Fieldhouse works so effectively for us.
From a macro perspective, was there a turn within your company, say, 5 years ago to, hey, we need to get out more within the community. We want to do more of these activations. And I mention that because obviously here locally, we know Indianapolis 500 presenting sponsor. And then the next thing I want to get into, of course, is the Caitlin Clark deal. And of course, she's almost seemingly coming here as the number one pick. But is that something that's really picked up steam within your company, of something that's been a priority?
Well, I would say all of this is a sort of a vision of our CEO, Dan Towers, who actually is an Indiana native. And so he's very much, sort of a hometown and feels the much like our company, the pride of being from the greater Indianapolis area. So, I think for us, it's just been a natural of, as you know, Group 1001 as a company has only been around for 6 years, and Gainbridge is even newer than that as we built out this technology. So really what you're seeing in terms of the expansion of our marketing and the Gainbridge name is really just arguably maybe that sometimes the marketing is preceding some of the products. So like we actually had the Gainbridge name out there a lot earlier than we've had some of the products. So we brought a number of different annuities products online recently. So, Dan's sort of vision was let's build the Gainbridge name as a brand, as something that's an important part of this community. And obviously, as I mentioned, a national company. And so, for us, it's been working well, but it's basically been, that's kind of as long as this Gainbridge has been around as a product.
Fascinating. Yeah. Let's go right to that Caitlin Clark part. Obviously that's gained traction just because of what she and her Iowa teammates have been able to accomplish. They sell out everywhere they go. The Big Ten women's basketball tournament sold out for the first time ever. The TV ratings are massive. I think they have the top six women's basketball games on six different, they have the top broadcast on six different networks. Like, you have to think that one through. That's a remarkable feat. So for you guys to be able to bring her in a partnership deal, even before she's done with college, what's kind of the vision for that? And what I've read, I believe, is a women's initiative, a women's product that she will be helping to promote.
Yeah. So it's sort of funny how it all came together. So we knew that the Beavs had a 50-50 chance of having the first draft pick. And so I went and I sat down with Dan and I said, hey, you're probably not paying as much attention to this as I am, but there's a 50-50 chance the people have the first pick. And if they get it, they strong likelihood they may pick Caitlin Clark. What do you think? And he said, because I was looking from the perspective of, hey, the Fever getter, what do you think? And
absolutely.
He said, she's such a force. We want to get her regardless because, again, you know, we're not in Indianapolis. We're Indianapolis based, but we're a national company. He said, you know, she would be an incredible face for the brand and obviously what she accomplishes, what she stands for. She, you know, she's obviously first class human being off of the court as well. So she sort of has all the shared values of what you would want in an ambassador. And, you know, to add her to names like Billie Jean King and Annika Sorenstam, who already, you know, helping to promote Gainbridge, but now here's sort of a contemporary of a younger generation with Gainbridge being sort of a technology fintech company. It made a lot of sense, but that's really how the conversation started. And, you know, from there it went pretty fast, but we were already in conversations before the Fever had the first pick with them to bring her on board as a brand ambassador. And so, you know, obviously worked out. It makes our, you know, everybody's a lot more excited about the Fever now with her coming. And, you know, I think obviously having Aaliyah Boston first last year and now presumably if they select Caitlin Clark, you know, there'll be a team to be reckoned with and a lot of excitement around them. But that's really how it came together. And as you mentioned, she's going to be the face of what we call our Parity Flex product, which is a financial services product. Designed by women with women in mind and has sort of characteristics of what sort of women want from their financial products. So it's a specific product that she'll sort of be the face of, as well as a new product that we have right now called Fast Break, which during the upcoming NCAA tournament, you'll see some advertising featuring her promoting the Fast Break product. So, you know, it's super exciting and, you know, it certainly has brought a lot of attention to Gainbridge here in this last month or so.
Yeah, I'm sure it's been a lot right now because there's nobody hotter even in the men's or women's tournament than Caitlin. So for you to be with her throughout this and then presumably right here in Indianapolis, that will be special. One more thing with the Parity Flex. What's the target audience there beyond women? Is it someone that's looking for an individual annuity plan? Is that who would be interested in this platform?
Yeah, so all of the products are, you know, so as with all financial products, they have sort of different characteristics. So again, there's the Fast Break product, there's the One Up product, there's the Parity Flex. Again, I'm not going to bring this podcast to a screen.
You're good.
The benefits of them, but you know, that's, you know, for those people who think that any of that sounds interesting, you can visit Gainbridge.io and they saw all the benefits of what each of those products delivered is out there. But that's one of the things that our team is working on is trying to be reactive to what customers want and then go and building the financial products with them in mind. So, you know, with more than half of our buyers and annuity purchasers being women, it was like, we probably should develop one, you know, specifically geared toward women. So that's what the Parity Flex product is.
And then how do you plan to utilize her to grow the brand and get it out there? Is it TV commercials on flyers on the website? What kind of vision do you guys have to utilize her and get it out there?
Yeah, I would say probably a little bit of all of the above, but we will have some advertising. I've seen an ad that will be running during March Madness around the women's tournament. So we'll have some stuff there. A lot of digital, you know, as you can imagine, a lot of, you know, the sale of annuities, people just going online and saying, you know, buy an annuity. So making sure that you're there in the digital space and are sort of forward facing in the places where people are looking to purchase annuities. So. And then obviously social media, right? So much of social media drives marketing nowadays. So she has such a rabid following, and every time she does something, you know, she grows more followers. So that's kind of what makes her so exciting as an ambassador. Is she's so versatile in terms of all the different ways that you can utilize her within your marketing mix. And so we're grateful to have her aboard and excited to start working with her really once, you know, once the NCAA tournament is over, really start to explore what those opportunities look like.
Yeah, that seemed like a no-brainer when you announced that deal here recently. I was like, oh man, that's too perfect from the way ticket sales are blowing up over at the Indiana Fever, and they had needed it. Now I'm sure they're doing just fine and probably having to bring on some additional sales staff to what could be coming for Caitlin, and then Gainbridge with coming off the All-Star weekend this past month and all the different things. Like, I feel like things have got to be good for the brand and what you guys had hoped and set out to 6 years ago or whatever it was to get it out there and get that name part of the conversation when you're thinking about these financial services, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's going great. You know, the date that we picked to announce the partnership was picked about a month in advance, and then she, you know, set the all-time scoring record on Sunday, and then we announced it on Tuesday. So, you know, sometimes it all worked. You know, first we had, you know, the Fever win the lottery,
right.
and then we announced it 2 days after. I mean, we couldn't have, as said to some folks, you know, if we'd picked any day in the last 2 or 3 years to announce the partnership, we somehow landed on probably the perfect day. But certainly has brought a lot of attention to Gainbridge, not only like from a marketing standpoint, but just for people who, you know, when I was, you know, I joined Gainbridge about Group 1001 about a year and a half ago and was, you know, doing my research, like, you know, what is this company? It's, you know, privately held. It's sort of hard to sort of dig in. And so I think for a lot of people, when we signed Caitlin Clark, that was a, like kind of an aha moment of like, wow, you know, this Gainbridge and Group 1001, you know, we're sort of like the $60 billion company that's, you know, Indianapolis's best kept secret. So it's fun to sort of bring notoriety to what, you know, all of our 1300 employees are trying to do to, you know, create these financial products for people.
And to that end, at least the brands we know she's working with, it's, you know, at least three or four we, I think, already know nationally. And those are prominent, nationally well-known type brands. So you're right to be in that conversation for her to say, yeah, absolutely, let's figure this out. That's absolutely huge. So for years now, since kind of the Gainbridge naming rights change, I've wanted to kind of dive deeper on this subject. So I appreciate you taking the time. And then you're right. In addition, adding Caitlin, that just added to this whole conversation, I think made it even more notable, kind of writing what she's been able to accomplish over the last couple of years.
Excellent. Well, certainly appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. We're, like I mentioned, we're excited to be a part of what everything that's going on with the Pacers and the Fever and the Fieldhouse. So, and appreciate you having us on today.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Fieldhouse Files. Again, read my coverage online at fieldhousefiles.com and give me a follow on social media platforms at Scott Agnes. And I'll talk to you again soon.